This is Graphically Novel, a podcast by three brothers who like each other but love comic books. I'm Jamie.
I'm Sam.
And I'm Sammy.
That's right. We have an honorary brother again this week. Josh is AWOL. He was, it's the holiday season. People are traveling, and Josh was unavoidably detained / traveling and didn't want to do a podcast from the road. So... And we understand. It's completely understandable. And we were happy we got to see him as much as we did. So that's fine. But we're soldiering on. And so this week we're going to be reviewing one of my picks. And it's James Bond, Volume 1, Warger, we think?
We've talked about this. It could be Warger, could be Warger. I'm not for sure. Yes.
But it's spelled V-A-R-G-R. I know there's some vowels missing.
it's supposed to be that.
But we'll get it. The title may be weird. We'll talk about whether the book was weird or not. You ready for some live action? Oh, I got to defend the pick. Okay, here's my defense for the pick. This isn't the book I thought it was. My favorite of the Dynamite rebooted Bond books is Eidolon or Eidolon. I'm not sure how you say it. It's the sequel to this one. I had them backwards in my head. I like Eidolon better. That's what I thought I picked for this one. So,
still yeah, Bond.
So, yeah. So if the grades are low, that's why. There's a better sequel. All right, well, speaking of grades, it's time for the live-action Batman grades. And this is our eccentric grading scale based on the men who have thus far played Batman in live-action. And from best to worst, that scale is Bell Affleck, Keaton West, Kilmer, and poor George Clooney. So, Sam, what is your live-action Batman grade?
All right, so I do love some Bond. But this one has a few problems with it that I didn't really care about. So I did give it a Keaton Plus, and we'll definitely talk about everything that I didn't like, but still a good read.
All right, Sammy.
I went same round. I went to Keaton. I think overall it's solid, but there's just some things that aren't really memorable. And we'll get to that. But that's the biggest thing I could say right off.
I'm the same. I've got a Keaton on this one. And solid was the word I used. It's just solid. It's a good read. It moves well. I think it's paced pretty well. It's not real memorable. I think you hit that right on the head. And I think that's why I remembered Eidolon as being the first book of the series.
Well, not to give any spoilers, but it's missing some Bond quality parts to the story for me. That's some of the stuff that brought it down. I guess that's what makes it not as memorable.
Well, and I'm not the biggest Bond fan. I think both of you guys, Sammy especially, are much bigger Bond fans than I am. But the reason I picked this up is, it was Warren Ellis. I've read Warren Ellis stuff that I like. And this was kind of, I think it was, came out, what, 2014, 15? I forget. But, and he was doing, supposedly a modern, update on Bond. Like, that's interesting. So I plugged into it, had a good time, liked it enough, read the sequel. Maybe just read the sequel. But I don't think it's bad. I think it's still it's a Keaton. It's a good solid read. It's
to this new world then.
Yeah, has entertaining moments. But there are there's reasons we gave it a Keaton, and we'll get into that shortly. But I forgot to pull up my creator credits, guys. Sam, do you have it in front of you?
I do not.
Sammy, do you have the creator credits in front of you?
All right. So we know that it is written by Warren Ellis, and the artwork, and I am having to look real quick, guys. I know his
last name is Jason Masters.
I know it's Masters. Yes.
Masters.
Illustrated by Jason Masters, colored by Guy Major, lettered by Simon Boland, and the collection cover is by also Jason Masters.
All right. Good deal. I still haven't gotten it pulled up yet.
Thanks, my pal.
All right, Sammy to the rescue. All right, well, this is the part of the show that is safe from all that spoiler radiation. After the spoiler klaxon, it is full spoilers ahead. Venture on at your own risk. believe I messed that up. All right, it's time for the five size breakdown. All right, Sam, you have issue one. Go.
All right, so issue one begins in Helsinki, and it's snowing. A bald man is running from a shadowy figure, and somebody throws a brick at him. Oh, about the bald man was doing some hardcore parkour also. It was awesome. But somebody threw the shadow figure threw a brick at him. Then the shadowy figure steps out and reveals James Bond. Bond shoots the man in the head. He returns to London, where he tells them of where they tell him of his new mission. He has a small, sorry, I can't remember writing.
Just top your nose, dude.
There is a small operation. It says Q takes Bond's gun and tells him he can't have it in the United Kingdoms, and it will be waiting for him at his next location. Bond meets Bill Turner at the airport and gets his instructions on what he's going to do when he lands in Berlin. He is to meet up with the Bonix guy, Krajak.
All right, issue two. It was supposed to be Josh, but, well, he's AWOL, guys. So, he has dropped the ball on us. He had his portion to do and didn't do any of it. Didn't even send us his notes. I wasn't upset until he didn't send us his notes. That's how this works. When somebody doesn't show, you send your part of the outline. Yet, here we are. I had to do it for him. So, Josh, I know you're listening. I know you're going to download this. Thanks for the extra work, pal. Issue two. Here we go. Bond arrives in Germany and thinks some hold on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I typed mine, so I can't read it. All right, here we go. Bond arrives in Germany and thinks some typical... I can't believe I harassed you about it now and I messed it up.
Yeah.
And he thinks some typical Bond stuff is about to go down. And let your mind run free there. Instead, he gets attacked and barely escapes after some fisticuffs and vehicular mayhem. He makes it to Berlin Station, where everyone is impressed to meet a real-life 00 agent. He is sent to meet Slavin Krajak, an asset of the Americans. But he gives off a weird vibe immediately. Then as the issue ends, we see that Dharma Reach is there with another person who has been modified by Krajak.
All right, so I have issue three, gentlemen. So, being sent on a wild goose chase by Krajak, Bond has a violent encounter with the Lebanese-German crime clan, Alzine. Shocked by 007's ability to survive, Krajak dispatches Mr. Masters to Berlin Station to finish the job. After executing the station staff, Masters is dismayed to find that Bond is not there. Meanwhile, in London, the call goes out to joint intelligence that there's something much worse in the imported drugs affecting the British Isles.
All right, well, issue four is my actual issue to do. All right, here we go. Bond runs into Masters on the street outside Berlin Station, and he clumsily tries to trick Bond into trusting him. They go to Krajak's lab. But Bond was never fooled, and Bond and Masters have a cool fight. But of course, Bond wins and tortures him into revealing a word that we think is pronounced warger. Krajak traps him, but Bond manages to MacGyver himself to freedom.
Okay. See? So, issue five. Mine also starts with Bond breaks out of his containment room. The big explosion. He flies back to London. M gives him info on that Dharma Reach. M tells him that they have 12 locations on the drugs, Bond. And Bond wants in on the takedown. While leaving the money, Penny gives him a knife, since he can't have a gun in London. Bond is driving to the docks when he is T-boned by another car. It is Reach. They have a big fight, and Bond uses his tiny knife and cuts up her new arms and kicks her into the water, where the arms explode. Bond makes it back to the headquarters. Bill Turner tells Bond they tracked her back to the ship Borger. I guess what we're saying. It's off the coast of Norway. Bond wants to be dropped in by a military plane. And that's how that one is.
Issue six is supposed to be another Josh issue.
Poor guy.
How hard is it to send in your notes? Anyway. Issue six, here we go. I'm doing another one. So if the listeners aren't enjoying my breakdowns, we know whose fault that is. So Bond executes a one-man assault on the good ship Warger that ends explosively. Krajak escapes to shore, and under questioning by Bond, reveals that he did all of this so that he could have friends and beautiful things. The end.
Yeah.
Of course.
I don't think that's how you get friends and beautiful things.
Well, I'm sure we're going to get into that. All right, well, now it's time for the graphically novel pyramid, the part of the show where we evaluate the book of the week based on the three elements we believe a book has to nail to be a good book. And the first of these is story. And Sammy, I'm not sure if you get the privilege, the burden, or just get the set the ball on the tee and start hammering. I'm not sure. Story, what you got?
Well, I'm going to start off with, you know, this is one of those graphic novels that reads better the second time. Because after I read through it the first time, I'm like, what was this? And so I reread it. And then I did get a little bit more. To me, the most Bond thing in this is the opening scene in Helsinki. It's almost like you can hear the theme music starting up when 007, after 007 shoots the guy. Okay. I'm just ready for bum, bum, you know, and just you can hear it leading in. But I feel like Ellis is trying to do almost more of an Ian Fleming Bond. You know, the Ian Fleming Bond and the movie Bond are a little different. He's trying to do a more down to earth. We don't have the, you know, all of the little flippant kind of movie references that you tend to get in Bond movies. So I think it's almost like a little bit more of a book version, but there's a lot of elements here. I mean, a cyberneticist who's doing is also a drug dealer, but an ex-concentration camp scientist. There's a lot going on.
Yeah. You know, and that's the thing too. Like Bond's always known for his suit and tie, which the he had that a lot, but it, never the martini because he had a whiskey at one time or something like that. So like they missed opportunity with the martini. I was thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, Bond's a spy. He didn't do no really spy stuff in this movie. He's more going around just shooting and killing everybody. He's more like the door kicker instead of the spy. And that's what I had the problem with more than anything. James Bond didn't try to infiltrate anybody anywhere, anything like that. Like literally as soon as he landed, that Reach girl was attacking him. So like his cover's blown from step one. Like I kind of did not like that at all. Just it killed me that he wasn't a spy.
Well, even when he gets to Kerjak's place the first time, he like calls him Bond instead of Hutchin. He didn't even care. It's like, yeah, I know. Nobody believes my cover stories.
Like, I don't feel I've ever watched the TV show Archer. It felt like an Archer TV show kind of. He just kind of around just shooting everything, and that's like no secret ID. I mean, so I really had a hard time with that.
Well, even after he knocks everybody out, he just goes around and systematically shoots everyone up.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, boom, next panel, boom, next panel, boom. It's like, okay.
But, you know, saying that, though, like, I do think it's a good story. And it does have James Bond in it, doing some un-James Bond things. But it's still a good story. It's a fun read. It's, I guess it's supposed to be a modern take of it. Like I think it's what Jamie referenced earlier. I just wasn't my favorite Bond ever.
Yeah.
Well, and that's one of my, I guess kind of a hiccup. There's times it's confusing because the pitch was, or maybe I misunderstood the pitch, you know, 8 years ago or whatever, but the idea was it was modern and updating, and you can kind of tell like there's high technology, but it's not like over the top, like from some of like the Roger Moore movies, like where it's just, you know, absurd, or like some of the Pierce Brosnan movies where it was absurd. So we've got like the guy who is experimenting with like bionic parts. I mean, that's something that's really happening in the world. So they just, you know, do a little bit of a sci-fi twist to it or whatever. But the guy who's doing it was supposed to be running a concentration camp. So when is this book set? Is this supposed to be in the 2000s? Is this the 2010s? Or is this supposed to be like 1973? I mean, when is it set?
You know, even at Berlin Station, the two people working there are like, ooh, you could feel Cold War coming off of him.
Yeah.
And I was just like, okay.
But there's the no gun rules in England. They're like, we're super in the news at the time this came out. Okay, it was a big deal that was happening. I think I don't remember, like, that would have put a date on it, wouldn't it, when that happened? But they just, it's a big deal because he has to wait and get his gun at the station. He's got the knife, and he's, like, walking around. He talks about how, you know, underdressed he feels because he doesn't have his tiny little gun. You know, it's just, when is this it? It was distracting at times, trying to figure out. Because every time they talk about him being working at a concentration camp, I'm like, how did you think this made sense? Because the guy looks, what, 35? Maybe?
I mean, depends on what fan I'm looking at him.
Well, yeah, we're going to stick with that, too.
Oh, we got some talking on that one.
One of the things about the story I did like was them, because like I said, they're doing the modern update type deal, was doing some digs at some of the, like, the over-the-top Bond stuff. I thought that was kind of fun. Like, and even some of the traditional Bond stuff, like making fun of the tiny little gun. Because that was made fun of, I think, what, 3 or 4 times. as Sam rolls his eyes. But, like, not getting a martini. You know, that kind of thing. It's just very, very, like, knowing, like, look, guys, it's not a martini.
Yeah, it's not. They made sure you knew it wasn't a martini.
Shaken, not stirred.
I mean, as a Bond fan, like, it's some of the ropes you're used to hearing and seeing and stuff like that. So, like, when they didn't throw it in, it kind of like, man, I don't know what they're trying to do. I agree with you, though, Jamie.
I did like some of that stuff.
Well, you know, and I think that the biggest thing for me in terms of story is the story does flow pretty well. And some of that, we'll get into the art. I think the art helps with that also. But I think the story flows pretty well as long as you're not digging too deep and trying to, you know, really connect all the dots, so to speak. You know, if you just enjoy the ride, it's pretty good.
Yeah, if you're looking for, like, a really in-depth, like, tense spy story, this ain't that.
No.
That's what I was expecting.
Yeah, if you're looking for, like, an action thriller, this is well-paced for that kind of story. So you just got to sort of, you know, readjust your settings, you know, for what you're getting into. And I have a good time with it. But even, like, some of the things I'm talking about, like, that I enjoyed, like, the digs, the bondness of it all, that gets ratcheted up and done even better in the sequel. And I think I'm importing some of my fondness for that into this one. And so, but one last kind of positive I want to say is I did enjoy the effort at having a villain who was different. Because, like, the traditional, like, and, like, the stereotypical Bond villain wants to take over the world, or he wants, you know, a kajillion dollars or whatever. Or it was to turn everything gold, or maybe I'm thinking Austin Powers movies now.
Yeah.
But,
gold.
But this was a guy with a completely different motives. And I think a very, very non-traditional motives for a Bond villain. And so I appreciated the effort there. It's kind of ridiculous. what they are. But I did think it was interesting that they went a completely different direction than what probably anybody was expecting. So I'm, you know, tip of the hat there. I don't think they landed the plane, but, I was, you know, intrigued by the effort.
I have no more notes on the story, but we're good.
All right. Okay. I'm up on art, and I think I'm also going to cede the floor to you guys, but, I thought that was solid. I thought it was pretty good storytelling. Like, I felt myself really pulled through the panels. I thought the art did a lot of the heavy lifting for pacing the story. I felt like it, you know, really, you know, was action packed where it needed to be action packed, and it was exciting. You know, some of the action stuff was really intense. Like the fight with the Alzheimer's guys, I thought was really good. The fight with Masters, I thought went really well. The page layouts, there's some really creative page layouts here that I think were really interesting to look at. I mean, elevator rides have never looked cooler than this thing.
Wasn't the ship too, like, when they done the layers in the ship?
Yeah.
Like,
mm-hmm.
Going through, because at first I thought that was a full page, because I was looking, I was like, oh, wait, no, that's panels. So they done a really good job blending the panels together on some of them.
Yeah.
Sam's gonna go off on the faces, so I'm just gonna let him have that. But one of my little ticks is weird proportions. Like when the head is too big for the body, or they're trying to do some kind of, doing some tricks to give you some forced perspective type thing on it. And it just didn't work. I think there was some of that here. It just didn't work. And there was some really, it led to some weird poses and some weird postures that just kind of like, maybe kind of, I have to turn and look at my tablet like, what exactly? yeah, so the proportions weren't great. There was a couple of times it was distracting. But once again, I thought it was competent comic book art. And I wasn't upset about it.
I mean, I agree with most of everything you said. I do like the backgrounds are really good on this one. That's one of the things I normally harp on. The backgrounds were really good. And when they didn't like that, when he was in the woods, going to the ship, when he was shooting the bad guys, remember that? He's in the snow and all that stuff's coming down. That looked really good. I thought the fight scenes were good. And you could tell this, I think this is around 2010-ish range when it's come out, right? So, yeah. Somewhere around there. That's, I think it's 2010-ish when it's come out. Because in the movies, like people got shot, they done like this X-ray so you could see the inside of their bodies. They've done that a lot here. They've done it pretty well. So you can tell they was on that hype train. It should be, I think it's the height of that when that was going on. So they was doing that in the comics too, and I thought they'd done good with it.
Well, they were also doing that experimental ammo thing.
Ammo, yeah. And I think that's why they've done that too. But the thing that killed me about the art, I agree with what James said, it's confident and all that stuff. But the faces, man, like Bond, Kurjak, Turner, and even that Masters guy, every now and then, they all look the same. I had a little bit different hair color and all that stuff, but their face, you could literally, I couldn't tell them apart sometimes. Like when Kurjak was talking every now and then, like they didn't say his name, I would have thought that was Bond or vice versa. I mean, they looked so similar to me. I was like, man, give him a scar or something. Just break it up a little bit. I just hate when you got like four guys or three people, whatever, it has the same shape, face, color, eyes. I mean, everything's the same, and it just drives me bonkers.
Yeah. You know, I think with Jason Masters, you know, you see some artists in comics that are draftsmen, and that's where those details come from. So all of the machinery, the buildings, I mean, super detailed. But sometimes they're not as strong with the human form, things that are more organic. And I think that's where this comes through. And I think that's what we see here. His page designs and layouts are great. I mean, they lead you through the story. They pace the tense moments well. But his aptitude isn't for the human form as much. And I know they're trying to get away from those kind of superhero poses. They're trying to do more realistic poses and stuff. But sometimes I think that can feel really static on a comic book page. So I agree with the backgrounds and stuff. They're beautifully done and rendered. But it's just the human forms, essentially.
Exactly. You know, and what it, but not only were they the same, though, they kind of evolved together, too. Like, when they aged them all up together, kind of looking like Bond and that Kurjak, towards the end, they looked older than they were in the beginning. So, I mean.
Yeah.
But besides that, like, the color was phenomenal. I agree with Jamie. The fight scenes, like that, just, but like you said, just everything but the human form was
tremendous. Yeah.
Loved it all.
And did you all feel like, especially the first issue, they got away from it after the first issue, they really used Zipitone too much. That's those dots.
Dots, yeah.
Like, it was overdone in that first issue. And it's almost like they realized after the first issue went to print, it's like, oh man, that's way too much. And so they start backing off. Like, it got to the point everything was blending with that Zipitone kind of a feature to it.
I kind of liked it. I mean, there was a lot, but it felt like it was a stylish thing they were going
for. Yeah.
Yeah. But I also didn't mind that they faded a little bit.
Like I said, it doesn't bug me, but I think it was overdone in the first issue.
Yep.
I guess. I kind of dug it.
That's a lot, like in background and on the cars and stuff.
Now, I do want to point out, Sam, you're going off on these faces looking similar. We have made frequent. Man, I can't talk today. Sorry, guys. It's kind of a problem for an audio podcast. So Sam's talking about having a problem with the consistency of the faces in this book. We also make jokes frequently on the show about how everybody can't be Jim Lee, because we all think Jim Lee's so great. I dare you to find a male face in a Jim Lee story that isn't the exact same face, Sam.
But saying that, they have different details that you can tell them apart. I wouldn't mind if they're all the same face. Like
the bat logo on his chest. You ain't seeing it on his face.
Wolverine had chops and funny hair.
They make them
separate a little bit. But you're right. That is Jim Lee.
Yeah, I mean, come on. Jim Lee has Bruce Wayne's hair parted on one side and Clark Kent's part on the other. I mean, come on. I mean,
duh. Yeah, okay. You bring the logic to my arguments.
We were also teenagers when we discovered Jim Lee. So.
That's right.
Yeah. Anyway, let's move on to characters. Sam, you're leading up on this one. Who you got? Well, what do you got?
Yeah, who do I got? Right. It's definitely a Bond story. Bond's the main character. They tried with the villains. They try to make the villains have a little bit of a story, like the Kerjack guy. We've talked about him quite a bit. Like he's not the typical Bond villain, but he is up to some shady stuff, and he has a lame excuse for what I write down. It's crazy. His lame excuse for what he wants was a beautiful people, and I can't remember what, money, fortune, whatever. He wanted all that back. So he's going around selling drugs and doing all this crazy stuff for that reason, and it's just not how you go about it. But, you know, he was done the bionic arms with the lady. Which she had a pretty cool story that was going on with her, but she was already twisted before she come to him because she tried to blow up her commanders or whatever. Yeah. And then you have the Masters guy. I don't know what his story was, but he was a different, unique character. Not be able to feel nothing. So he inflicts pain on everybody else to try to feel something from their pain, I guess it was his MO.
Yeah, he was unable to feel pleasure.
Pleasure, which is weird. I didn't think he could feel anything, but whatever. But, you know, unique characters there. But then, on the good guy side, I mean, you just got Bond. I mean, they really didn't try with anybody else. They were just placeholders to get shot later.
I did think it was interesting that at Berlin Station, they were all, like, incompetent fanboys. And weren't really, you know, they weren't really spies. I thought that was a fun little thing they did.
Yeah. Well, you know, and the thing is, I mean, even when you look at the movies, characters like Q and M and Moneypenny, they're there for a scene or two, but they're really there to prop up Bond. And that's what we get here with those. Even the, you know, with Dharma and Mr. Masters, I mean, they feel like they belong in the category with Odd Job and Jaws. And, you know, they're just cool looking and they've got a cool something, like a cool gimmick they bring to the story. But you don't, I mean, nobody ever asked, you know, where did Odd Job come from and how did he get his hats and you know, all that kind of stuff. I mean, at least here they told us how Dharma and Masters kind of got a few things. So.
Yeah, so they tried with the villains. Like I said, I feel like they put more effort into the villains than they did the other people around Bond. You know, I feel like besides Bond, it was the villains that had any kind of story at all going with them. And it was a different take, I guess.
I thought this was a cool update of Bond because he's a very different Bond than what we're used to. He's got more of an edge to him. There's a brutality to him that we don't frequently see. And we'll probably never see in the movies to the level. Sammy's talking about walking around the building, executing people. So I enjoyed that, the different take. But for me, the big shining thing here was the relationship between Dharma Reach and Mr. Masters. They're both their different hangups and the way that they connected with each other and their problems in their relationship and just Masters, dude, that guy, I mean, the thing that really got me about him was after he finished at Berlin Station and he forgot to leave anybody alive, but he still went around interrogating the corpses.
I know.
About where Bomb, like, this dude has got some issues. What is his deal?
Yeah.
But I mean, I just those two characters I thought were really intriguing, and I'm almost disappointed that they both, you know, don't survive this story. I would like to see them as like recurring characters in the further, you know, Dynamite Bond series. But I thought they were interesting.
So, okay, it's a question, about characters, since you're talking about that Reach lady, they made a reference that after her arms blowed up, they backtraced her all the way back to that warger. Did she die? Was she? I mean, I never showed her again. I thought she died in the water, but they made a reference to them tracing her back to the ship, and that's how Bond ended up going to the ship. Or did I read that wrong?
I didn't read it that way. I thought they were tracing the technology back there.
It might be the technology. Because yeah. I thought she died.
I did too.
Yeah, that's the way I took it, is when the cybernetic arms exploded.
Yeah.
She went with it.
Yeah, it was a big boom. This is good audio podcasting, guys.
See, that's what we were missing. See, that's what we were missing from this. We needed a line like Bond saying, "Oh, I could have given her a hand," or something. I mean, that would have felt like Bond, right?
Here's what got me. I'm going to read this couple little bubbles here. So this is Bond after she blew up. They're back at the headquarters. He goes, and then the batteries in her prosthetic arms explosively combusted. And then that Turner guy goes, "We've tracked her back. A sequence of private planes. She clearly couldn't use commercial air travel with those arms." So it says she flew in from Berlin. It says, "No, we lost her there. We picked her up at something all also or whatever. And then she jumps down to Floro and flies into Britain from there."
I thought they were tracking her back, following her footprints in the opposite direction. Like, this is where she came from. Like, they tracked her from the warger to where she's at now.
Now, okay.
Yeah, that's kind of the way I took that.
Yeah.
Because I was confused because he's about to have her arms blowing up, and they said, "No, we've tracked her back."
No,
her arms were like, it says,
I think you're trying too hard, bro. Not that kind of story.
Travel with those arms. That's why I was confused. I was probably talking about her arms being blown up, so she couldn't fly commercially. So she was taking private planes. It was on page 145. If you're looking for it, Sam.
Yeah, because she's the one that T-boned Bond.
She's the one T-boned Bond, knocked him in. She had the big fight. He stabbed her in the arm.
And she's like, "You killed him," and she's like taking vengeance essentially for Masters.
Yeah. So I just assumed she died, but then I read that next page and I was like, man. Sound like if their arms blow it off, she went back to the ship.
Yeah, because essentially, I mean, she's handing it to Bond, you know.
Oh, yeah.
No pun intended. See, I should have written this. But till she turns his back on him, and then he's like, "Oh, you know, you're awfully, you know, brave turning your back on your you know, opponent, you know," and then he kicks her into the water and then kaboom.
I was just confused on that. That's the story things I think they had trouble with, was the fine detail sometimes.
Yeah. But I think we're dancing around the big problem here is Kerjak. I mean, this story, I mean, Masters and Reach are interesting characters, but they're basically henchmen. And Kerjak is supposed to be the big bad. And he's kind of a disappointment from the word go.
mean, he's not the big bad.
It's like, okay, it's like trying to take Egon from the Ghostbusters and make him the bad guy. I mean, and then you could have made that work. But then when they finally unveil, like, number one, it takes like 5 seconds. Like, he's on that ship for like a hot minute before it's all over with. And Kerjak doesn't fight him. There's no big thing there, even though he's got the prosthetics himself. Like, he's all juiced up, too. I mean, there's nothing to it, and he does this little whimpering, whiny, you know, explanation of his reasoning at the end, like, I wanted friends and beautiful things, and it's like, that's all I wanted, and, you know, it was just, at the core of it, you know, Bond needs a good antagonist, right. And this guy's so disappointing, it's a bummer. He's the problem, and he's the reason this book is not as memorable as it should be.
I agree. They could add some more.
Yeah, and like I said, he's just one of those characters. There's too much going on. I mean, the whole idea that he's super rich, he does cybernetics, he's creating this designer drug, he was an ex-concentration camp worker. He's the whole drug angle, I thought, was really confusing. I know that goes back to story, but I just think it in terms of character, it just dilutes his character down further.
Yeah, he's captain of all the bad stuff.
Yeah.
All of it.
All. You know, and speaking to his character, though, like, when he done his villain monologue, like all villains do, they have their monologue. It's when they had Bond was trapped in the containment room, was getting ready to superheat or whatever's going to happen to him. He was giving his monologue while he was doing things, and he said the world is his human feature disc. So he was just testing on humans. That's what his thing was. He just wanted to make humans suffer and test on them, see what was going on. And then he done a flip at the end, and he just wanted friends. He didn't want everybody to suffer, I guess, after all.
Well, he even said that he chose Britain because it was an island, so it was like his own little playground.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was weird.
Yeah. Pretty sure flight's been invented, guy.
Yeah.
we've been sailing those oceans for a long time. I don't know. He's the problem, though. Everything that doesn't work about this book, almost every single thing revolves around him. Mm-hmm. I mean, which is also, I think, why the next book works better. He's got better people to play off of. So
there you go.
I picked the wrong book, guys. Sorry.
And I know this is almost a little bit more on story than character, but should we not have more of a reveal for Kerjak as a character? Like he was behind it all. It's like from the first time you meet him, like, yeah, he did it.
Yeah, he's the bad guy.
I mean, it's like an episode of Scooby-Doo. I mean, it's like, oh, there's the gang and one other person. That other person has to be the ghost, you know.
Well, on his third panel, the guy turns his back on Bond and sneers and rolls his eyes. I'm like, well, yeah, he's the bad guy, clearly.
Yeah. It should have been a little bit more of a twist there somewhere. Like, oh, it was Kerjak, you know, kind of deal.
Never seen that come.
Well, yeah, and like, he's hanging out with like Reach and Masters like all the time. Like, they're just hanging out at his. Well, I'm like, you're not hiding the ball at all here, guys.
Nope.
Anyway, you want to give us some awards?
Let's do it.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
All right. Josh was supposed to have sent us his best cover because that's how this works. And so. We're going to give our best covers because we did our notes. And also, when Josh says he doesn't do his notes, that usually means he didn't even read the book. And so Josh is going to be confused by listening to this episode.
I actually think he read the book. He just actually don't think he actually had any notes.
I don't know if that makes it better or worse that he didn't send his notes in. Anyway, my best of the regular covers is on page 61. And it's the silhouette of Bond in his tiny little gun over the Union Jack. I thought it was just a really cool looking cover. It's not dynamic. There's nothing really exciting going on. It's just a really cool image. And the blood spatter on the Union Jack is pretty cool too.
Should be no gun there. Guns in London.
With so little, he's able to sneak it back in.
Oh, okay. All right, so I'll go next. You went first. I'm on page 94, issue 4. It's the green one. I like the green for some reason.
It's a good cover.
Like, and it's all bionic. I mean, don't have nothing to do with it all, the story.
Yeah.
I mean, there was no Ferris wheel or not like in it. But, you know, I just like the colors and the art.
Yeah. You know, what I found interesting with this, the collection cover is not the original first issue cover. They changed that, and you don't see it. So when I wanted to, you know, talk about my best cover, I really liked the cover on the collection. I like Bond staying in the midst of all of these, you know, different rifles and pistols and things. It felt very James Bond. You know, it felt like an opening scene, you know, with Bond kind of, you know, moving around that silhouette almost. And so it felt very, very classic James Bond, but I thought it was interesting they didn't use the issue 1 cover, that they used that one. And I double checked. I even went to a couple sites and looked it up, and it was a different cover every time. And I was like, "That's interesting."
That is. I just assumed that was the original issue 1 cover.
Yeah. Yep.
Interesting. Well, that is a good cover, though.
Yeah. I do agree, Jamie. I do like the one with the Union Jack. and the Walther P99, you know, with the silencer, the silhouette. I mean, it's a nice composition. Plus, it is Francesco Francavilla. So,
oh, is it Francavilla?
Yeah, that's Francavilla.
I didn't look up who did that one. I assumed it was Masters. I thought he did all the main issue covers.
But my
no wonder. I love Francavilla.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So that's
yes, I did a variant.
Was that not your thing? Sorry. Was that your pick though, right?
Yeah, the collection cover was probably my favorite cover of all of them.
Well, my variant is on page 190, and it's the Black Cat Comics exclusive variant for issue number 1 by Aaron Campbell. And it's I'm sure Sam hates it because it's black and white, but I just think it's a really kind of a striking image. The way that Bond is sort of running at us, I like the way he's drawn there, and I like the way his head sort of disappears into the action scene above him. I think it's
issue 1, yeah.
And I think it's a really cool looking cover. Sam, yep. What was your variant?
All right, so I went with the classic Bond. I went with the Sean Connery Francavilla cover. It's on page 183, and it is an alternate for issue 1 also. I liked it because it had Sean Connery. That's Sean Connery. You can't deny that.
Yeah. Yep.
And a little classic
one. Couple of the variants are Sean Connery.
Yeah, and I just, of the Sean Connery covers, that was my favorite. Because it looked like a movie poster.
Mm-hmm. Movie. Yeah, I think it's really funny that we all kind of talked about the variant for issue 1. Mine is also an issue 1 variant. The Midtown Comics exclusive. Page 196 looks like an old spy novel, mm-hmm. You know, the little dime store novels.
Yeah, I like that one.
You know, I kind of dug that. I think Robert Hack, I believe, is the artist on that. But it's something real old school dime store spy novel feel to that. And I just kind of dug that.
Yeah, I consider that one. Cool. It's even got the used bookstore sticker on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
007. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's really cool.
If only they had like torn off half that cover, then it would totally felt right.
Rip the corner off at least.
Definitely not enough creases in it.
Yeah.
All right. So Sammy, who was your best character?
All right, guys, I can sum this up in 3 words. Bond. James Bond. Because really, as we talked about, he's the only one that we really get whole lot of characterization from for me. I think Ellis does capture what makes Bond interesting. He's cool. He's suave. There is something a little elitist about him. I think that definitely comes through. Mm-hmm. And kind of that's where, I guess, Ian Fleming kind of comes in also. I mean, a little bit elitist. He knows he's the coolest guy in the room, but he doesn't really feel like he's got to flaunt it. But I think we see the other side also, the Stone Cold Killer. Not just that, we see the 00, not just the spy.
Yeah, this guy definitely has a license to kill.
Yeah.
He uses it, yeah.
I'm going to zag. I thought Mr. Masters was super interesting. And it's not just because he has my haircut from high school. Although I did enjoy that. I enjoyed having hair. But I just thought like his whole hang up I guess it's a disability. He was completely unable to experience pleasure, and the way that you know messed with him, and his relationship with Reach, and the way it messed with his interactions with other people, because you could tell he didn't have there was no normal human interactions with him. Everything was off. Everything was strange. And it seemed like even the way he looked at the world had been twisted by that. And so I just thought he was really interesting. So,
it was
so I gave the wrong answer.
You did. It is Bond. James Bond is.
I know. I know.
It's a James Bond story. And James Bond is, like you said, the coolest guy in the room. But,
he's a good James Bond.
He's a good James Bond. I liked it.
I knew I was giving the wrong answer.
That's right. I was good to mention somebody else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Glorified honorable mention.
There you go.
So I know I have the right panel. I think Sammy's gonna have the same panel as me. And my question is, what do you have for the panel?
Okay, number one, that was a good segue. And I don't have the right answer.
I'm pretty sure me and Sammy have the right.
I know I don't. And it's got... So it's on page 172. It's panel four. And it's more about the drama of the thing, because there's actually a couple of things about the panel that annoy me. Kerjak's arm on that panel is ridiculous.
Space.
But just, you know, he basically the whole game is up and everything's over. The ship is sinking in the background. And once you, like you're talking about saying, like you guys are talking about with his master's backgrounds, it's a great background. And it's Bond closing in for the final confrontation. And, you know, he's wearing black. He's armed. You know, I don't know. It's the drama of the moment more than just the art. And so I thought that was cool, even though that arm, dude, it's so bad. All right. So Sam, what the right answer is, Sam. I'm sorry.
All right. So page 10, panel 3, classic James Bond opening. When it's all red and you're looking down the barrel of his gun. And the way for that movie to start is if it zoomed in on his barrel and went down in the barrel and then popped out and there was James Bond again. That is James Bond. That's it.
Yep. Yeah, probably the right answer.
I agree.
Panel 3.
Beautiful, beautiful panel there. Completely and totally. But I went with a little different one.
Oh, yeah.
I did. I love the panel you're talking about, Sam. And I agree. It's classic Bond. Classic. You can feel it. You know, it pulls out and you're in the barrel of the pistol. You know, I mean, I could see it right now, you know. But I'm going to go with the next panel after Jamie's, because that feels like Bond when Kerjak goes, "You sank my battleship." So... 172, panel 5. I mean, just that felt like a Bond movie. You know, the only thing that would have made it is if it would have been Bond and would have said, "I sank your battleship."
Oh, man. Yeah.
You should have saved that for best dialogue.
I had another one there that I really liked for dialogue. I do have an honorable mention just because I thought it was funny. Page 24, panel 2. The idea of Bond sitting in a folding chair in a commissary cracks me up. First of all, MI6 has a commissary.
Yeah.
And all they can spring for is folding chairs. Yeah. And here's James Bond, Mr. Suave, and Tanner talking about this whole, the hard rule being imposed on the 00 section. Yeah. And they're sitting in folding chairs, eating in a cafeteria. Like, I just love it.
Yeah, I don't think James Bond would actually walk in that room, honestly.
No, he wouldn't.
But nope, I'm out. See you guys.
Don't think we'll make it better if he's holding like a paper cup of coffee or something. I didn't realize how ridiculous that was until you pointed it out.
I mean, think about it. At the station, he does it, Berlin Station, he's not even sure if he's going to try the coffee.
Yeah.
But he's sitting in the MI6 commissary with no problem. You know?
So bad. All right. Sam, what's your best dialogue?
All right. So Sammy was right with the sink my battleship, but I have another one. So it's when Kerjak was doing his monotone, whatever, his monologue.
And then, it was probably monotone, too.
Yeah, it's probably monotone. But Bond's response is what got me. It was on page 112, panel 3. He goes, "You shot all your employees and put a disease inside a drug, Mr. Kerjak. Did you wash your hands afterwards?" I was like, yeah, that's James Bond.
Well, I'm gonna jump on board and jump line and say I picked that whole conversation, and I thought it was doesn't make any sense. There's no way to make without using time travel to make sense of Kerjak's backstory. But I thought it was just an interesting exchange between the two of them. I thought it was Kerjak's best moment in the book, where he actually felt like somebody who could match with Bond. Because by the end, like you realize, like you know, he's not really doing the whole telling Bond my entire plan thing. He's like, I'm just getting you to stay in this room long enough to set the trap, and then I'm getting out of here. I'm not right. really unpacking everything for you. I thought it was Kerjak's best moment.
Yeah, you know, and that has a similar feel to, you know, the what do you expect me to talk? No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die.
Oh, that's good.
It has that kind of to it.
Yeah.
I've got another piece of dialogue I really loved. And so I know a lot of times on Nerds of the Roundtable, our dialogue turns into conversation more than one-liners. So I love Bond and Q discussing Bond's choice of weapon. And Q looks at him and says, "And get a proper holster, 007. That floppy chamois leather thing will kill you one day." And then you get this nice picture of Bond going, "A hard holster will spoil the line of my suit." Yep. And I'm like, that is a Sean Connery line right yep. there. I can see Connery delivering that, no problem.
Oh, oh, that's so good, too.
All right. Well, Next War is the best full-page spread. And if you can tell by the rotation, this was supposed to be another Josh one. And here we are. Here we are. All of the we is not assembled. So my best full page spread is on page 159. And I turned off my tablet by accident. Because that's how I'm that's how I'm doing today.
Just the art section, yeah.
This is like Sam's talking about, like how he's moving. It shows how he's moving through the ship with just the layout of the page. It's just Sam would probably tell me it's not technically a full page spread, but it's such. I figured you were going to be pedantic about it. But it's just such a great layout, and it just and the way it shows Bond being sneaky and moving through the ship. I really liked that page.
It's the only time he done actual any spycraft sneaking around.
Yeah. And even comments a couple times that Darma has bad spycraft. And I'm like, dude, where are you using it? You
know? I even thought, even when he got on the phone and was like trying to like let them know that he was with Masters and like, you know, that he didn't believe Masters, like it was still so clumsy. I was like, how does Masters not know? This is not normal human dialogue. Sorry. Sam, what's your best?
Page 171, the battleship sinking. That's good. No humans in it. No human form.
Yep. Oh, and I don't have a backup because there are only two full page spreads in this entire book.
Tenable. Yeah.
Technically two. And that's I agree with Sam, the battleship. And it's not just the detail, it's the coloring also. This is, to me, where Guy Major really shines as the colorist. Just the warms and the cools, the lighting effect, all of that from the explosion to the ship to the water. You know, there's a lot of organic and geometric going on. So lots of composition, design, and then the color really just accentuates that spread.
There's no wasted space in here. Like the background, not overly full. It's the skyline stuff, and then the details that gets in the ship and all that stuff. I mean, it's really well done.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that's a really great page turn.
Yeah.
Because everything else has been really subdued leading up to that, and then suddenly it's that bright, you know, explosion popping off the page. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So agreed.
Probably the right answer, but I love so many of the page layouts. I wanted to use one of those. So, once again. Wrong. It's fine. I feel like that between Warren Ellis and Jason Masters, they were really trying to make this book feel cinematic. And so our last award this week is best. That should be in a movie. So where do you think they nailed it, Sammy? What was the most cinematic thing in here?
I think the thing that definitely should be in a movie is that X-ray effect as the bullet is going into the body. I mean, just the way it's going in, the way that the ordnance was separating into those pieces. I know it would be super graphic in a movie to see that in live action. But at some degree, we could see that without going too far overboard, yeah. I think. And I just think it just makes for, you know, it's almost like that next generation bullet time type of thing.
Yeah, I think they could do it in silhouette, but just like do it in like some, a couple times it was just like black and red. Mm-hmm. And it still really works. And it's just really like, you know, it's brutal. I mean, what? Mine is the attack on the Vardar. Or I don't know.
The ship.
but just seeing, I mean, even if it's just, you know, if it was like the next Daniel Craig movie, if they're going to come back one more time, to see him do the assault on that ship in that fashion would be really tense and really exciting. I think that would make for a really good set piece in a Bond movie.
I think that'd be really good because they like have him sneaking around. They could have build it with the tense music while he's sneaking around, setting his bombs up and all that stuff. Yeah. And he runs out, creates a distraction because he takes his silencer off, starts shooting people so they'll chase him or whatever. It's like they've been really good. I agree with you. But that was my pick.
All right, I got one. Yeah. Nice.
And I think that would work well with Daniel Craig. I think that would suit his Bond really well. Because there's something a little bit more visceral about his interpretation of James Bond.
I think he's a little colder mm-hmm. than some of the other Bonds. Yeah.
He's more of a hammer than a...
More of a hammer than a what?
Apple.
Oh.
Yeah. A knife.
Yeah. He does have kind of an edge to him, but... Well... He's done being Bond, but so let's move into our cast it section. Oh my gosh, guys! If only I weren't so lazy, I'd edit all this out. But I'm not going to do that. So now we're going to cast this thing, and I'm going first on James Bond. And this is probably my best answer, and I hope at least one of you agrees with me. I'm going Michael Fassbender. I think he'd be a really good Bond.
Mm.
I think he'd be good at this Bond.
Yeah. I think, yeah.
Well, you think about his Magneto.
Yeah.
And there's a cultured side to his Magneto, as well as kind of the supervillain side. You know, there's something a little bit more to him. Yeah.
I like it.
I'm thinking especially like First Class Fassbender. Because he's still playing nice at that point. But he always has that edge to him. There's always an air of violence about Fassbender in First Class.
I never thought about that. Yeah, I like it.
I like that.
All right, Sam, who you got? Right.
So I cast a guy in his mid-30s, is what I was thinking. Make sure he's a British actor. And I know he can do action stuff. I don't know how he's going to do on the suave spy stuff. Kit Harington is what I was thinking.
No.
Why not? I think he can do it. I don't know about him in the suit and being the suave guy, though. But I think it'd be worth a shot. He's a good actor.
He can have an audition. He ain't getting the part. Moving on.
I do like Fassbender.
I do like Fassbender very much for this. I cast it a little different here, guys. I went with Matthew Lewis because Neville Longbottom has grown up. And I think he could fit the bill for this.
Is he old enough?
He's in his mid-30s.
Yeah, so he's the same age as Kit then, yeah.
Yeah, he's in his mid-30s.
I've seen him in something recently, so yeah, I mean, yeah.
I think he could pull this off.
I don't know about that one. I'm not going to dismiss it out of hand.
Like you did Kit, I'm just saying.
Well, people make decisions.
I mean,
people make poor decisions, Sam.
It's tough to get past Neville Longbottom. I'll admit completely and totally. But when you look at him now, grown up, he's got that suave look to him.
He's actually got like an athletic build now and all that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Well, moving on. I think we've got. A good answer and a half there. Sam, who is your Kerjak?
Alright, so I know a guy plays a villain really well, and I think he can make this character better. Is Daniel Day-Lewis.
That's pretty good.
I think he could turn his character around and make him super interesting. They could change some up for him, but yeah, I think he'd be really good Bond bad guy.
I could see him as a Bond bad guy. Maybe not this guy exactly. They have to rework this whole.
Yeah, so that's do some tweaking, but I think he'd be amazing.
All right, you're doing better. That's an improvement.
I could see. Yeah.
Bond was my worst pick, by the way.
We know. All right, same here.
Well, for my Kerjack, I went with the actor I really think the art's based on, and that's David Dasmalchian, Kurt from the Ant-Man series. Hmm. He even has that can do that Russian Slovakian kind of accents. He's there.
Yeah, he was in Dune for a hot second.
Yeah, he was.
I almost had a line. That's not bad.
Yeah, especially taking from Dune. He can play that.
I'm gonna go Adam Driver. He's got an interesting face. And I don't mean that as negatively as that sounded, but like his face has a lot of personality. And I think having him and Fassbender so we interact off of each other, I think Driver would elevate the character as well. And so
yeah.
I like Adam Driver, so
I wonder what Josh would have picked for that.
Daniel Day-Lewis. He would agree with me, so we outnumbered you.
I don't think it works that way. I would also like to know who Josh would have picked for Dharma Reach, which was his job on the next pick, but here we are. This might be a little bit of a time machine, but only a little bit. I'm going to go Halle Berry. I think she would have been a really good Dharma Reach. Like, you know, not that long ago. And I think probably she could still pull it off. I know they're drawing her much younger than she is now, but Halle Berry, I mean, we've seen her in like the John Wick movies. I mean, she's still, you know, she's still Halle Berry. Yeah. I think she could do it.
And if you look on page 63 at the Dan Panosian variant, he's drawing Halle Berry.
Yeah.
Hands down. I didn't notice that.
Oh, yeah. Hands down.
Yeah, he is. You're right.
Yeah. I mean, that's flat out Halle Berry that yeah. Panosian's bringing in that pant on that cover. So.
Yep. All right. Sam, who'd you have?
I went with somebody different than Jamie. I went with Zazie Beetz. She plays Domino.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked her.
That's a good one. She was my runner-up.
Well, she's more age-appropriate than Hallie, because Hallie's like in her 50s now, just so you know.
Ageism.
I'm just casting for...
Some of us age better than others.
I mean, I'm not saying she didn't age bad.
All right, Sammy, who you got?
Well, for Dharma, you know, with Kerjack, I said Kurt from Ant-Man. I'm going to stick with the Ant-Man vibe, and I'm going to go with Hannah John-Kamen, who played Ghost.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
And I think she works really well for that. We know she can do the physicality needed. Plus, she can play, you know, kind of the conflicted villain, you know, kind of character.
Yeah, that's really good. I think you saw it from a scene.
Okay, I'll love it. I like it. I like Zazie and yours, Sammy. The Ghost.
Somebody's bitter about this Kit Harington shade.
I honestly knew that one was coming.
All right, Sammy, who do you have for Mr. Masters?
All right. I had to go Cillian Murphy because Masters has a Peaky Blinders feel to him, the haircut and all. And I can so see Cillian Murphy. You know, with that diabolical, almost this monotone delivery in the way that he would play Masters.
That he plays such a great villain. I can see that. I really like that.
And he can play that cold, kind of detached villain that I think Mr. Masters would need.
I was going to say, I think Cillian Murphy's eyes would go a long way to sailing.
Yep.
The whole Mr. Masters experience.
That's really good.
Okay, that's probably better than mine. I'm going Tom Hardy. I think he's a better actor than he gets credit for. I'd like to see him play a guy this messed up. And I would like to see him. Revenant? What's that?
Revenant. Have you seen that?
No.
Tom Hardy.
Seen that one.
Yeah. You need to watch that.
I like watching movies that are lit. I heard you can't see anything happens in the movie with the lighting so bad.
It's not that bad.
Anyway, I think Tom Hardy would be good. Also playing off of Fassbender. I think. I mean, a lot of the rest of my cast was like, who would I like to see on screen with Fassbender? And I think, you know, that the dynamic like of them playing off of each other and trying to like pretend that the one doesn't know who the other one is. I think that would be an interesting set of scenes. But Cillian Murphy's the right answer. Sorry, Sam. We're beat.
It really is.
Who you got?
Colin Farrell.
Yeah, that's good too.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, he can play that same type of cold, kind of malevolent type of character. So I think it'd work really well. Maybe it's Bullseye.
I mean, Bullseye, for real.
Yeah, and that was a masterclass. got to flex all of his acting chops. He's not the only person embarrassed to have been in that movie. Anyway, moving on. So M is our last one we're all doing together. And I think it's a good answer, but I'm also like, I feel bad picking him for it. But I'm going with Idris Elba. And I know that, you know, for the last 20 years, we've wanted Idris Elba to be Bond. I'm afraid he's aged out of being Bond. So now he has to be M. But M has so much attitude in his few interactions with Bond. I would like to see Idris Elba. Like, I think he could do that. Like, the way he, like, sort of demeans Bond. Like, he's the only person in the book that really demeans Bond and tells him that Moneypenny has I consider Moneypenny's job more important than yours. I mean, it's like, I could see Idris Elba having that dynamic. I would like to see that.
And that's exactly why I picked him also, because I picked Idris Elba that line. It's like, I can see him giving that to Bond. And what's funny is, too, like, you know, when I cast Idris Elba for this job, for him, it's like, man, he's just a retired 00 running the show now.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see him still having the credit and then being a guy Bond would want to listen to. So I agree. Idris Elba.
All right. Idris Elba would be a great choice. I didn't win this one, but I went with David Harwood. He plays Martian Manhunter on the CW Supergirl show. He's been in a lot of other things. I know he's a couple episodes of Doctor Who. But I think he fits for this. Like I said, he feels like he could be a retired 00 who's worked himself up through the ranks to become, you know, the head of MI6.
I can see that.
They probably don't have to pay him as much. So. Yeah. He'd be a little bit cheaper since Supergirl's canceled now, so he's got to come up with something.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, this last season was the last one for Supergirl.
All right. I watched about 30 minutes of that show. It was all right. of course, I didn't finish a whole episode, but... all right, Sam. We're doing the wild card round. What obscure person appeared in half a panel did you pick this week?
All right, so I actually picked somebody that has... It's actually two somebodies. And it's
oh, wow.
And they have two lines, but it's on...
lines this time? Wow. Yeah.
All right.
Page 156. It's the two bad guys Bond snipes from a long ways away. It's the one bad guy calls the other one an idiot. He's talking about the snow. One guy says it's like wet frog sitting him. And then the one guy goes, you're an idiot. And that's Sean Bean getting shot and killed. And then the idiot, the bad guy number two is what I called him. The idiot is Simon Pegg. I can see him talking about snow being like frogs. Sean Bean calling him an idiot. So I done him as a pair.
So Peg would have is the one with the face mask on and Bean, because we didn't see Bean's face, right?
Thanks, I mean, yeah.
We gotta know it's him dying.
Yeah. It's Sean Bean dying.
That's pretty time. Good.
I like that.
All right, Sammy, who's your? Do you have somebody with more lines than that?
Honestly, I went with Moneypenny, and I know that probably on the nose. But when I think about, you know, Bond, you know, we talked about M and we talked about Bond, and just Moneypenny needs to be there. Now, I've not seen, because this is one of those deals I was looking through pictures, trying to find somebody I felt looked this part. So the actress I chose, it's Ash Santos. She is in American Horror Story Apocalypse.
Okay.
So I've not watched a lot of the American Horror Story stuff.
I haven't seen that one.
But I just felt, you know, just based on her look, I mean, she feels very Moneypenny to me as the way she's portrayed here. So Ash Santos.
Okay.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah. Almost, really looks very much like the art.
Yeah.
Especially in that first meeting.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I went with, you know, what kind of jumped out at me.
So for mine, I'm going to go with the head of the Berlin station. I was amused by those goofballs. just, I really got a kick of that whole dynamic. And so I wanted to have a real tone setter, somebody to be the head of station there. And I'm going with Nick Frost. I think if you walk into a spy station and Nick Frost is running it, I think you're setting the tone for that scene.
Yeah.
Great.
All right, well, we're done with whatever this thing is named. The James Bond Volume 1, something or other. Sam, it's your pick next. Why don't you preview next week for us? All right, maybe Josh will even show up for this one.
Maybe. Anyhow, East of West, Volume 1, The Promise. Well, here's the summary. This is the world. It is not the one we wanted, but is the one we deserved. The four horsemen of the apocalypse roam the earth, signaling the end of times for humanity. And our best hope for life lies in death. I just thought that was catchy. And like the art, from what I've seen, preview looked pretty good. And the Western said at the end of times.
Can you tell listeners who wrote it?
I didn't want to.
No. There's positives and negatives.
Jonathan Hickman wrote it. There you go. I'll get it out there.
That will be a subject of discussion next week.
It's a pretty short one too. It's only 5 issues, so.
Now I'm a couple issues in. I'm having a good time. I think it's going to be a really good discussion. So I would definitely tune into the episode on this one. All right, guys. I think we're done here. Salute.
See ya.
Take it easy.
Goodbye, Switzerland.